Welcome to the Israel Conversation by the Masa Leadership and Impact Center. We are informally debating issues that concern Zionists about life, culture, and politics in Israel.
Hello to our dear listeners. Welcome to today's podcast episode. I am joined today in the studio with Jordana. Hi, Jordana.
Hi.
And this is Jordana's first time in recording in the studio, I believe.
Yeah, my first time here.
Wow, that's very exciting. And we're also joined by Mike, who it's definitely not his first time in the studio.
No, hello, dear Matt.
Hello, dear Mike.
It's not only the listeners who are dear.
That is true. You're very dear to me as well, Mike. So this morning we are going to be discussing what is actually a very emotionally charged, difficult topic. And that is the topic of the hostages. The hostages who, as of speaking today, on February 25th, there are still 134 hostages being held captive in Gaza in what we can only imagine to be terrible conditions. And that's the information we've received from those hostages that were released as part of the first deal. And at the moment, there is no deal. There's no formal deal on the table. The question that's been asked a lot in society, in Israeli society, is what is the priority of this war? What is our number one priority? Is number one priority to release the hostages, to get the hostages out of there? Or is the number one priority to destroy Hamas's capabilities to repeat October 7th? And so today, that is the debate that we're having. Jordana, we're going to begin with you, who is going to be arguing that the number one priority for the current war is to destroy Hamas's capabilities so they cannot repeat an October 7th atrocity again.
Yeah, so I think the argument we definitely hear on this side is that we can't let Hamas continue to be as it is, as they're able to build up weapons, acquire money from the international community. For years, they really meticulously planned out this very awful attack. And if we don't completely destroy them now, there's no way to say that they won't do this again, that there's not already another plan in place. What's going to happen next? The Israeli population is scared, and rightfully so. People are slowly starting to return to their communities along the Gaza border, but we want them to be able to do that safely and securely. We want to have strong borders. We want to know that we don't have any threats there. By not destroying Hamas, it poses a lot of challenges for the Israeli public, for the security infrastructure as well. If we pause, right, like the truces would say, if we want to prioritize getting the hostages, what Hamas is originally asking for was a complete end to the war, a permanent ceasefire, or as we're seeing now in these new potential Paris negotiation framework, they might only ask for a 6-week truce to start with. But by giving them even a day to pause, right, we're allowing them to regroup. We're going to make the end result even harder to achieve, right? Every day that we let them regain weapons and bring their key staff right into prime positions and to rebuild what we've already taken from them, it's kind of negating all the Israeli loss we've already suffered. And that's a really big concern for our people. But ultimately, I think it's really that security and that we can't let them repeat the attacks that they've already gotten.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mike, would you like to present your perspective, please?
Sure. Well, of course, we both have to acknowledge that this is a very difficult issue. Israelis are, this is a problem from hell in terms of imagining, you know, losing these people in the effort to destroy Hamas. And I don't know that we really have to choose between the two. It's a question of priorities. In other words, even if I say the priority should be getting back the hostages, in no way am I saying we got to let Hamas, you know, continue with what they're doing and, you know, get back to work. I think a delay in order to take a breather serves Israeli interests as well. There's Israelis, as we speak, are looking into entering Rafah, and I think also wouldn't mind a several week breather while they plan and get ready. These things are not easy to do. But I think more fundamentally, you know, we had a minister of the Knesset who said hostages have to be a secondary concern. And family members of the hostages said, well, if it was your kid, would you still be saying that? It's such a devastating point. And of course, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one or the few. And of those 130, we don't even know how many are still alive. But let me give you a simple dilemma. The Israelis know that there's a tunnel. They know there's Hamas people in the tunnel. Let's say they know for a fact there's 3 hostages in there. Do you want to order the artillery person or the pilot of the plane to let loose a bomb that's going to kill 3 of those hostages? Like, I think there are certain moral questions that in the abstract, we can talk in the abstract and come to very, what we think are logical decisions. But in essence, once you bring it down to an actual decision to make that's specific, suddenly the morality becomes clearer. And I think it's even the logic becomes clear. You can't kill three Jews to kill 10 Hamas members. And if that means delaying victory against Hamas to preserve our character and our morality and our values and the lives of our loved ones, you know, Jordana mentioned that people are starting to go back to the border. They are. And if we kill their relatives, well, maybe they'll feel less in danger, but we're devastating their lives all the more. So I do think that setting the war aim, this is the position I'm arguing at least, and when it comes to specific decisions, prioritize the hostages. At the end of the day, we will defeat Hamas. We will not allow them to do what they did again, ever. But our priority should be for now getting back those, however many they are alive. And unfortunately, probably some aren't. But doing everything we can, making that a strategic priority, seems like the kind of thing that Sahal would do and should do.
Okay. Thank you to both of you. Jordana, I want to come to you first. You were talking about the reasons why it's so important that Hamas are defeated, and gave a very strong argument for that. But just to take something that Mike was saying, and I'm sorry to do this to you, but I think it's important in the context of this conversation. How would you respond to that idea? Imagine, God forbid, it was one of your loved ones that was in that position, and someone comes to you and say, okay, Jordana, which is it? The priority is destroying Hamas or getting your loved one out of there? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think the morality argument is so strong. And I think we definitely feel as a people in each of our hearts that the obvious answer is give them whatever they want. We just want to bring our people home. And I think that's what the hearts of all Israelis are saying. But when you look at the strategic and the long-term element of it, for each day, right, that we can pause or that we can put off an operation or an attack because of potential hostages or even civilians on the Gaza end, it runs the risk that we don't ultimately achieve our goals of destroying Hamas. We see the international community is turning against our aims, that people, even America, is starting to put pressure to end the war, to get these temporary truces, and then ultimately that permanent ceasefire. And Netanyahu is very strong and adamant, right, that we won't do this, that no matter what, we're going to keep pushing to get to our ends. But as opposed to October 7th, when we had the full support of the international community, we're seeing that that's starting to go away. So it really brings the question of how long can Netanyahu hold on to his goals, right, of fully destroying Hamas if he keeps pausing, if he doesn't go full force? To answer the question directly, right, what would I do if it was my family member? I would hate to think of that. But what I can say is you see some of the members of the current hostages and their families. I think the vast majority is saying do whatever it takes. But you have seen some on the other end, and you have seen some of those people who are currently in that situation who are arguing, you know, we love our family. We want them to come back, but we have to do what's for the betterment of the people at the end of the day. And we have to do whatever it takes to stop Hamas as soon as possible.
Well, OK, yes, I watched an interview with one of those family members you were talking about from the other support group. I don't know the right word for it, but
they're advocating deep unprioritizing their relatives. Yeah.
And it was so painful to watch that. Yeah. And we're talking before we came on air about how somebody has strength to carry on with in this, when they're in this situation. I was like, oh my goodness. Wow. Like it was really, really hard. Okay. Thank you, Jordana, for that answer. Mike, to turn to you, how would you respond to the idea of having that Jordana's mentioned that the pause and the break, because you said that everybody agrees that Hamas has to be destroyed. How would you respond to Jordana's point that it's might not actually happen if we keep pausing and keep delaying and keep like dragging this out? We may not be able to do that. How would you respond to that?
I don't think that's true. Like our leaders said at the beginning, this is going to take a long time, and we're not in Israel, we're not used to long wars, and so people sort of heard that. I had that with my students. What's a long time? Like 2 months? And I'm like, no, it's going to be longer than that. You know, and still to this day, you know, I have people saying to me, well, definitely, you know, oh, we'll do something in the summer. The war will definitely be over by then. But I don't know that that's true. These are, whether you're talking about Hamas or if you can add Hezbollah to the list, this is going to be a long, sustained campaign. But the level of the campaign, what we saw, you know, 300, 400,000 troops mobilized in the first days of this conflict is not sustainable in Israel. That's not. And so what Israel does well are either very short major campaigns or smaller precision campaigns. And so within, we've demolished Gaza. There's very little standing. there is a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, allowing that international pressure to achieve some of its goals of relieving the civilians of Gaza, but while still not taking the pressure off the members of Hamas. And if that means smaller, more targeted missions, a change of strategy, a change of tactics is entirely possible. There's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know. And I'm certainly not an in-the-field expert at this sort of military thing. But like, I'll just give you an example. We know that after the Munich massacre, the Mossad went around the world and hunted down not all, but almost all of the perpetrators and the planners. We get the job done eventually. We have already made it so that in the foreseeable future, October 7th can't happen again. Hamas is not in the foreseeable future going to come over the border. They're not going to get close to the border. There aren't enough buildings to hide in. Like, it's demolished. So that's not a short-term concern, which gives us the breathing space to then do the sort of missions and military tactics that will continue to eradicate them. If Sinwar, you know, did Yahya Sinwar, the head of Hamas in Gaza, did he escape into Egypt or not? I don't know. But if I worked in an insurance company and he applied to me for, you know, for life insurance, I would say, I don't think you're really, I'm sorry, Mr. Sinwar, you're just not the kind of person we're looking for to insure. To me, there's no question that the end is achievable. It's a question of when, not if. And so I am genuinely, and here I'm saying this beyond the two sides in the debate that we're having, which I can argue either side, but I, Michael Unterberg, in all honesty, don't have a real concern that we're not going to achieve the destruction of Hamas at some level. We're not going to end radical Islamism. We're not going to stop Iran in the near future. So the conflict is going to continue. But this function, this organization is already, when you kill half of a military force, it's not half as strong anymore. It's decimated. It's disrupted to the point of dysfunction. It's not like every soldier you kill reduces it by that amount of points. It's that the operational teams are shattered. They don't have the teamwork. Their training to do what they do is gone because at least half of them, something like that, are already dead or captured. And so we'll continue to press on. We'll continue to kill terrorists. We're just going to change the mode. That what we're going to see for the foreseeable future is a different set of tactics. And if that means a 6 weeks breather, I have to believe, and listen, I'm as cynical and worried about our leadership as any other Israeli and their maturity and their confidence, and are they mixing politics in their decision-making? But I honestly don't believe that the heads of our military, if they agree to this, any deal, I don't think they've taken their eye off the ball. That I do trust them. If they say they're going to get the job done, I have enough faith in the Israeli military that they'll get the job done.
Just to push back on that, mm-hmm. Everything you're saying, I agree with wholeheartedly. But then the question on the other hand becomes, we will achieve our goal, but at what price, right? We're still seeing every day, like, we're nervous to look at, like, the Times of Israel, right? Mm-hmm. Which Israeli soldier has been mm-hmm. killed this day? And the longer this goes on, right, the more time we give them to even just regroup some of those tactical units, right, the more they're able to pursue, and the more and more now Israeli soldier lives we're going to see being taken. Yeah. So at what price are we willing to continue this prolonged, God knows how long, operation war until we reach those ends?
Yeah, that's what war is. And we sort of have this feeling of, you know, every day we open the newspaper, and we're well over 200 now. And I said to my students in the first week of the war, I said, we're going to see, as the time goes on, and they were asking me, well, just like the next 2 months? I said to them, no, it's probably going to be longer. I said, but you're going to see a lot of destruction of Gazans, and that's going to be hard to watch. And we're going to see soldiers fall, and you'll see. When soldiers fall, it doesn't hurt less than when civilians fall. But that is what war is. That is what war is. You know, when you send cops to fight crime, and I don't want to be cold about this, because every soldier lost is, but that's soldiers falling to get those civilians out. That's their job. That's what, and they'll tell you that. Now, you have another issue, which is we lost some soldiers trying to get back what were already pretty clearly corpses. That I really do question. And I even wonder how many Israeli families would say, look, we all want the body back to bury the body, but don't lose boys over that. I think is a more open-shut issue. And I think there was a lot of talk when that happened. There was discontent in Israel of like, we don't lose boys for that. But to get back hostages, I don't think anybody looks at Yoni Netanyahu, who fell, you know, freeing the hostages in Entebbe and said, well, that wasn't worth it. We all hold him up as a great hero. This is what war is. This is the price to be paid. It is horrible, right? The famous Alterman poem, this is the, you know, oh, you were given your state on a silver platter? Yeah, the silver platter of the dead young men and women. I don't say that as a cold, calculating shrug of like, well, that's just what it is, but that is what war is.
Right, but I think that almost argues then in a way against the hostage deal, because if we're sending in our soldiers to rescue the hostages at the risk of their own lives, doing it now, we have the most strategic advantage. But if we're going to take these pauses, then you're running the greater risk that these soldiers will die in these operations to rescue them because you gave them this time to recoup. So I feel like it's almost against this potential hostage deal because we're going to go in and we're going to save them on our own without this international community and without this negotiation process.
Look, I don't really know that that's true. We found out that our government and our military had no plan for a post-October 7th. You know, governments and militaries are supposed to have war-gamed plans for all sorts of different possibilities. I am sure there are plans. And I know that there's been training for what to do in a war in the north in Lebanon, but there was no plan for reconquering Gaza. And so there were several weeks after October 7th where we did nothing. We were drawing up plans. And many of us were in fear of what the death toll would be. I assume it's as low as it is because they took that breath and they took that delay and they made their plans. And as they went in, they learn from their mistakes. I don't know that Rafah is going to be different. In other words, what you're saying is that this delay could be of benefit to Hamas. I don't doubt it. I also consider pretty seriously that it could be of real benefit to the IDF to take a breather, to make their plan. This is going to be one of the hardest missions that they have to undertake. And so this six-week breather may be just what they need to figure out a way to reduce civilian casualties, reduce our soldiers' casualties, and yet take out Hamas. I don't know. So, but I'd kind of be willing to bet that it would help Sahel.
So I have one final question before we wrap up. The conversation that you guys had this morning, or that we've been having together here, this debate, as mentioned earlier, is something that's been happening a lot in Israeli society, and to some degree, it's become politicized, right? We've seen that the way that our politicians, Mike spoke earlier about one of the politicians who very openly said where his priorities were. Other politicians have said, no, their priorities are to bring the hostages. I know we don't like to predict on this podcast, so we'll try to avoid predicting, but I'm going to ask you to predict.
Some might say that's a paradox. You just put us into that.
Sure, why not?
We try to avoid, so let's do it.
Let's do it anyway. Let's dive into it. And this is a question for both of you. Can you see let's say, God forbid, the hostages aren't freed or released, or not all of them, or whatever it is, and we come eventually at some point come to elections in this country. Can you see the hostages becoming an election issue? Jordan, I'll start with you.
Yes, I think it's definitely going to be something on the voters' mind, on the politicians' mind. It seems the Israeli public, from various polls, has been leaning more towards continuing this operation and destroying Hamas. Also seems like, I don't want to say it's like a right and left issue, but it seems like the right will still hold on to the advantage in the polls, whether it's Netanyahu or Gantz or any of these other politicians or Lapid. But I think we're still going to see a relatively similar government framework. I think the leading politicians have been critical, but ultimately still have those same goals. So I don't know how much it'll actually see an end result, but I do think it'll be like an end result, meaning like a change in the current policy. But I do think that it'll be an issue that will be brought up and discussed, and you'll see people try to come up with some nuanced opinion to try to gain more voters. I think we could see that happening.
Okay, thank you. Mike?
I don't think it'll be much of an issue. In other words, look, we've gone through hard times. I think the ultimate voting is going to be on trust and competence. Do we trust these people? Do we think they're competent? And when you have politicians who the majority of Israelis think are prioritizing politics over security, victory, and rescuing hostages. So I think that's going to be the priority. However you decide these issues, I can even disagree with a politician, and I think everyone understands that. I might make a different decision. But if I think you're doing a competent job and actually putting the country's interests at the forefront, you have my vote. And so I don't think so. I think the Israelis, for the last few election cycles, the elections have been less about particular policy issues and more about, do we trust the people to do a good job? And I don't think that's going to change in the next election cycle, especially after October 7th. I think the current government has lost a tremendous amount, even among its own voters, of Israeli support. And we see that in current polls. What that'll mean in the next election, I don't know, because I don't want to predict at that level. But I don't think the hostages, how we talk about the hostages, how mature we are in discussing these issues, I think is going to be a more central issue. I'm hopeful that that's where the Israeli electorate is going to turn. Can we have some adult conversations instead of childish sniping and political shenanigans? Can we have responsible, adult, mature leadership? Agree or disagree, but we'll vote for mature adults.
So instead of predicting, we're being optimistic. That's
yeah.
Hopeful, maybe.
No, but I think that's where we're going. I think that's what our, again, current polls aren't a great predictor of what the eventual election results will be, but it does give you a feeling of where the Israeli electorate are now. And the vast majority of Israelis are like, we just don't trust these people to do a good job anymore. I mean, what the current coalition, which is 64 seats, is now polling at like 45, 47 seats or something in the current polls. They've lost the trust of the Israeli people. And so that, I don't foresee that changing before whenever the next election is. My guess is we're going to see something like that. And I don't know that the hostages are going to rise to challenge that direction.
Okay. It's also interesting just to think if that's one of the factors in where that trust has been lost, of course, or how the war is being conducted, how the post-war conduct will be, what the economy is going to look like, because we've seen that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. But Seda, okay, well, thank you very much to both of you for this very insightful conversation. As we pointed out, it's obviously a very difficult conversation. Yeah. It's a conversation which is happening in every coffee shop and every classroom and every dining table around the country. Doesn't make it any easier, of course. Mm-hmm. But we thank our panelists for their insights, and we thank Ben for his work today, and we thank you for listening and hope we've given you some good food for thought.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Israel Conversation by the Masa Leadership and Impact Center. In everything we do, we hope to connect our fellows to Israel as home, that our Masa fellows will feel at home in Israel and understand more about its diversity. We connect our fellows to Jewish peoplehood, to feel an affinity for Judaism and a sense of belonging to the Jewish people, and the connection is active and meaningful in their lives. And finally, personal development. And in the case of this podcast, our goal is that you'll be able to use the tools and learning for reflection and future development in conversations about Israel and Judaism. If this episode is meaningful to you, please subscribe and share with somebody that you think it will be meaningful to.